Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Oh, just all right?
Is there an expectation that I would be doing better than all right?
I don't know. I just thought you would try a little harder. For me, we haven't talked in a long time.
I'm fantastic. How are you? Is that better?
Yes, that's much better. Thank you for using your fake radio announcer voice for that.
That wasn't quite my fake radio announcer voice.
Okay, it was like 50%.
How are you tonight, Joe?
Thank you
It's
very much for
closer.
asking. Now we just sound like
Not really an answer, though.
no. well, so hi.
How's
Hello.
it going?
Okay. I'm just readjusting to life back in Los Angeles after being so very, very far away in Mexico.
How was life in Mexico?
Weird. I've never been in an all-inclusive resort before. We were there for Jason's friend's wedding, and the wedding it was very nice, but being and the beach it was located on was beautiful, just absolutely stunning to look at. But the hotel facility itself was weird. It's kind of odd to go somewhere, and there's no expectation of money changing hands, and how that changes a lot of things. It's a little weird, a little peculiar, compared to how I'm used to things. And I think I prefer the other way, where I'm paying for things, because then it feels like there's more of a contract, and certain expectations that you might have, about things, particularly the quality of beverages and food. But not to
So there's no
besmirch.
money even for drinks and
No,
food?
that is what an all-inclusive means. What
Well, is there a limit to how much you can eat and or drink?
no, but that also results in the quality of the things maybe not being so fantastic, so perhaps you might not be compelled to go on that journey. But it doesn't seem to bother some people, who may or may not be Americans, who may or may not be imbibing to a certain degree. But yeah.
Interesting. I feel like I remember it being like 90% all inclusive when we were doing our little video thing down in the Cayman Islands, but alcohol was definitely not included in that. Our weird little lunch and dinner buffets where they would step out of the little like hotel cafeteria thing and like ring a bell to let everyone know that food was ready. That was all free and included, but not alcohol.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, there were restaurants on the property, and there was also one place that had a buffet. But the restaurants weren't really restaurants. It was kind of like you went and you sat down at a table and you had a waiter, and you would pick something off of a menu, and then he would disappear into the back, and then something would come out, and it was probably sitting in a hotel pan, chafing dish arrangement in the back for quite some time. And that would be what you were served. So you were essentially getting buffet food on a plate, but you just had the experience of picking off of menu and having a waiter. It was
Well,
very
that way they
odd.
make sure you don't take more than your allotment, I guess.
I suppose.
So you don't abuse the all-inclusiveness of it all.
No, I mean, but they're totally happy to give you as much stuff as you wanted. Like one of the things that I had was we tried the Mexican restaurant that they had on the premises the first night, because of course. But unfortunately, it's probably one of the worst Mexican restaurants I've ever been to in my life. The quality of the food was the best actually at the Italian restaurant, because it was kind of approaching like Olive Garden levels, I would say. In that it seemed all very decent, except for when I mistakenly ordered the chicken parmesan, because for some reason in my mind I was like, maybe they'll actually fry a chicken cutlet to order, and that didn't happen. So instead you got a chicken cutlet, which was covered in breadcrumbs, like a chicken cutlet should be, except it was steamed, obviously, for a very long period of time. So all of the breadcrumbs had reconstituted back into bread by that point with the amount of moisture. But yeah, it was odd.
I was somewhere recently where I had a horrible chicken parmesan. I can't remember where it was, but I think the entire thing, The chicken portion of it was maybe like an eighth of an inch thick, which is not.
Oh, you went correct. To the same place.
it was slightly crispier.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where I think they might have burnt a little bit of the breadcrumbs and then
Ooh.
Put some very average sauce on top. I'm trying to remember where it was. It was not the worst chicken parmesan I've ever had, but it's certainly not the best. Chicken parmesan is one of those things where it's almost universally bad until you find a place that does it right, and then all is right with the world.
I make a fantastic chicken parmesan.
Oh, is that so?
It is so. But you'll never have it because we don't cook for one another. But one of the other better places to have it actually is The Palm, which is a restaurant from New York, which does old style Italian American mobster food, of course, as you might expect. And that's our segue.
Oh, that's our
segue into my blue heaven.
Can you get a side of linguine with your chicken parmesan there?
I don't actually remember what the side is. If it's potatoes or if it's pasta, I think actually it's a side of spaghetti that
it
comes
with. Yeah,
it
should
be. Well,
I prefer to get a side of angel hair and marinara with my chicken parmesan.
Okay, well, I'm sure they'd fix it up for you. For ordering what I'm sure is probably these days a $34 chicken cutlet. Yeah, if you don't have that kind of money, you can always go to Maggiano's. As my dad calls it, Maggione's. And I have corrected my father so many times. He just it does not register with him. He just keeps calling it Maggiano's to the point where now I just go, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that place.
Sure.
The Italian Cheesecake Factory.
The first time we went to the Cheesecake Factory that opened in Tampa, he didn't want to go. It was a suggestion of my aunt from California who was visiting, who was very, very familiar with the fine Cheesecake Factory establishment. He didn't want to go because he thought it was a dessert place, that it would just be ice cream and stuff because it was called the Cheesecake Factory.
It's not a good name.
No, it's not a great name.
But I mean, if they were being honest, they would just call it the average food factory. Because I think the factory portion of it is very important.
Oh, well, it is. I mean, it's fast food. It's fast food that you get at a table. Like we were just talking about the restaurant style where you basically have buffet food served to you via a waiter. And this is, you know, fast food served to you via a waiter in tremendous portions, which I never quite figured out why that happens. Because somehow they still expect you to order cheesecake after, and the only way you can really do that is if you're getting to-go boxes, because those portion sizes are incorrect for that.
I have never had cheesecake at the Cheesecake Factory, and I've ever eaten there, I don't know, three times ever in my life, but yeah, there's so much food that you can't eat anything afterwards.
No, it's disgusting.
Yes, it's also disgusting, and there's too much food.
Well, I personally feel like, I don't know, a whale that swallowed a squid made of lead or something, but I don't find it.
I don't, what?
Well, whales eat squid or plankton, but, you know, you take a lot of lead plankton to equal one giant lead squid. You know, let's be honest.
I didn't quite follow that math, but I will take your word for it.
Sure. Let's do that. At the hotel in Cancun, I had discovered the Paloma because I figured out that their margaritas were awful. It was a sweet and sour mix from a thing.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Like whiskey sour, sweet and sour mix?
I couldn't tell you specifically, but it was a mix.
It's probably like somebody took regular margarita mix and they're like, we'll just squeeze a couple of limes in there and that'll make it seem like it's a fresh mix. And then it just tasted like sweet and sour.
It mostly tasted sweet. There was no adjusting the sweetness of your margarita. Jason tried to order a margarita less sweet. That resulted in exactly the same margarita. But I discovered the Paloma, which I was somehow less offended by than the margarita. I think it's because it doesn't have as much of that, like, how should I say this? Acid refluxiness going on as a bad margarita can.
I have had acid reflux since Saturday when I ate entirely too much pasta.
Was that the thing that you posted on your Instagram stories of you just downing all of the Italian food in Arizona and then telling Brian Hamilton, to move to Arizona to have Italian food with you?
I suggested no one move to Arizona. I suggested that he come here for that meal. This is the Instagram post you're referring to. This is everyone's favorite grumpy Italian guy from Food TV's restaurant now in Phoenix, Scott Conant. You know, the guy who wears a suit and unbuttons his shirt down to like the middle of his chest.
And he hates raw red onions. He opened a new place out here.
He apparently moved here to retire. Apparently
it was chopped too much for him.
There was an article. It was something something good place to raise our kids, go to school, blah blah, whatever. Ugh. Which is.
That's a lie.
it's total bullshit because this is not a good place for schools.
No.
But he opened this restaurant called Mora, M-O-R-A, and it is magnificent. The pasta is wonderful. But I ate all of it. I ate all of the pasta.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was good. And then I had heartburn for 3 days after that.
Yeah, that can happen. I've been to his restaurant, Scarpetta, in Miami at the Fontainebleau. Which is the same hotel that they use I'm thinking that I want to say GoldenEye, but that is absolutely wrong. Goldfinger.
Goldfinger? The onesie?
Yeah, that's the one. The one with the terry cloth romper.
Wait, I want to get back to this Paloma thing that you were talking about, because Paloma was the name of speaking of Arizona schools, that's the name of the first elementary school I went to in Phoenix.
Oh, interesting.
Our mascot was a duck that surfed. It was a seagull that surfed.
As they do.
sure.
Yeah. So the margaritas are not working. And I was like, I don't want to go up and order a Manhattan. And I don't want to have whiskey on the rocks because that's disgusting. I don't know what else to order. It's not like there was like a menu with ideas in it. And
what's wrong with just straight whiskey?
I don't like it.
I drank a bunch of that this weekend, too. That might have contributed to my acid reflux.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. So instead, what I discovered was that I would go up and I would order a Paloma, which I found was actually a cocktail. And I figured out that that's what all the bottles of the grapefruit soda were for that were behind the bars. Because apparently it's grapefruit soda and tequila. And somehow the grapefruit soda completely masks anything about the tequila being there, which I otherwise find mostly disgusting.
What soda do they use? This seems to indicate that sometimes they use Fresca, Squirt, or Jarritos.
Well, it's supposed. What I found out is it's supposed to be Jarritos.
I very much enjoy the Jarritos, by the way.
I've never had it, but that's supposed to be the one that you're supposed to use. However, this place had just giant bottles of Figo or Fago or F A Y G O? What is that?
It's the Insane Clown Posse drink.
Yes, it's that. They make a grapefruit version.
Was this all inclusive hotel run by the Insane Clown Posse? Did everyone have painted faces?
No one did. It was otherwise free of any ICP stuff. But yeah, we had they had that, and so I was like, okay, so that's fine. And there was a salt rim, which I could get past. I generally don't prefer salt rims because I don't enjoy a lot of sodium on a personal level, but I know that almost everyone else universally does, so I try not to be a bother if at all possible.
You try not to be a bother.
Yeah. Oh, bother. But so then I tried to make a Paloma, but I went to BevMo and they did not have grapefruit soda, and I was not going to make a second stop for Jarritos at some place, or try to find any other grapefruit soda. So instead, I settled for a certain fizzy water beverage that comes in a pamplemousse.
Oh my god, no! No.
So I have some reposado with a squeeze of lime, and I even sliced a little piece of lime to float in it, but it sank. And then I have topped it all off with the LaCroix.
LaCroix tequila. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, well, it's grapefruit flavored. It's kind of like a watery margarita, as you might imagine from the fact that it has water in it. But
see, and this is my primary complaint with the LaCroix, is that it is not carbonated enough to be a proper fizzy beverage.
No, all the carbonation's completely gone. It's flat.
Yeah. No, it's barely carbonated for the first minute when you open it. That after that, no, it's not good.
This is what's wrong with the youth today. They don't appreciate a fine fizzy water beverage.
They recently moved my carbonated beverage of choice from the specialty beverages / water section of our Safeway to the mixer section in the wine aisle. So I have to go all the way over there to get my my seltzer now.
Wait, your refreshy?
Yeah, they moved it all to the mixer section of the wine aisle now.
So, what? Wait, why?
I don't know. For people, I guess there's the alcohol over there too for the various mixing. So I guess if you want to make a cocktail with seltzer in it or something.
Yeah, but it should be in the water section.
It should be, yeah, but it's not.
Because you know what it is? It's water.
It is water.
That's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Also frustrating, the 12-packs are cheaper than the 24-packs, if you get two 12-packs, I mean, of course, which annoys me because I feel like I'm wasting cardboard just to save a dollar.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've spent so much on seltzer, especially recently, haven't you?
Sorry, I was drinking some seltzer. I had you on mute. Okay. You really want to get into that story? I know it's your favorite.
No, yeah, it's fine. But yes. Let's talk about a movie that has a grocery store in it.
Mm-hmm. It's a good grocery store scene. So, on the whole, what'd you think of the My Blue Heaven here? Deep sigh.
It has some funny moments. I genuinely wish that almost any other actor had been cast in Steve Martin's role.
How dare you? He's perfect for this role.
He's not perfect for this role.
The whole movie is ridiculous.
No, but I don't mind the over-the-topness as much as just he executes it so poorly. Like, he goes in and out of his bad fake accent off and on throughout the picture. And sometimes correctly pronounces things that he should be not doing and other things, and it's just like it's really distracting.
It's a comedy from 1990.
I know, but do you know what came out the same year, a month later from this, that was also based on the stories around Henry Hill?
Goodfellas?
Yes.
This is not intended to be.
Yeah, Nora Ephron wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband wrote Goodfellas.
Oh, they must have been working on it at the same time.
Yes, they were.
That's
they interviewed Henry Hill at the same time.
That's kind of fascinating.
Yes. And do you know what I would rather watch?
No, this is more fun to watch. It's also shorter and...
Yeah, it doesn't have the merengue and...
Oh, God, the merengue dance scenes in this movie are so great.
Yeah, I mean, it turns out I really like merengue music. So
plus Bill Irwin doing his little solo dance at Hotel Del Coronado is spectacular.
He really gave it his all. I did not like that they decided not to put any extras in those scenes. Like, all of a sudden they went from a pool party thing at the Hotel Del Coronado to a bunch of empty chairs and tables.
Well, it's at certain times of day that deck is like that. They don't actually put tables down on the sand. That's a construction just for the movie. I like the hotel. I've been there many times.
They obviously did that just to tie the two places together, because why would you have some of the people from the party down there? Just be like, you guys got the beach tables. No, that was weird.
All of those locations, the pool location, the deck location, and the beach location, they're like 50 steps away from each other. Mm-hmm. They just like moved the camera from one side to the other.
Yeah. Well, it felt like they basically had one day to shoot at the Hotel Del Coronado, and they had the extras for that establishing shot.
Mm-hmm. The joke about I didn't marry her under my real name. Don't worry about it.
What?
When he was talking
Right. He was reciting the joke. I thought you were talking about the actual scene where he had said that to him. Never mind. Yeah, so he's telling that joke, and then Hannah is like, you know, I have a sense of humor, etc. Which they keep talking about. But anyway, this movie. Meh.
No, it's a good movie. It's fun.
Meh.
It's fun.
It's at least it was inexpensive because it's part of the HBO subscription that I already have right now. But
I thought you meant it was inexpensive to make, which is also seems to be the case.
Oh, well, yeah. I think you see every dollar on screen here. But
most of the money went to Steve Martin's suits.
Very expensive suits. $1,200. 18% on a credit card.
It's not a good interest rate.
No, that's...
Although I think that's probably better than we have today.
Could... Well, I mean, it really varies wildly. But so anyway... yeah, this movie is a meh for me. I would put it in the same category as I put LA Story, and I like LA Story slightly better, but I find LA Story to be far more uneven than this movie. I think this one is much more uniform throughout in tone. So it has that going for it.
LA Story is a Steve Martin movie.
You've never seen LA Story?
I don't think so.
Well, I'm not feigning surprise because I think that everyone should have seen LA Story. That is not the case. I'm feigning surprise because you were such a big fan of My Blue Heaven that I would have expected you to seek out other Steve Martin movies of the era. But
oh, I feel like I may have seen this. I'm just looking through the photos on IMDb and I don't recognize any of it, but I feel like this is something I would have seen.
Yeah, well, you probably at least saw some of the scenes from it, especially the scene where they're all ordering their espresso drinks with the various things at the beginning of the movie. But that movie is far more uneven. It is two movies sandwiched together under the title of one film. The beginning half that happens in LA, and then the latter half, which happens in a completely different romance construction from the rest of everything else. And I like the first half of the movie, and then I despise the latter half of the movie. This movie is much more even in tone, where I didn't despise it at any point.
Yeah, I think this movie is very clear about what it is going to be and what it is not going to be from the very beginning.
Yeah, and even though I did not find it like knee slapping hilarious, there were some chuckles throughout. So
you will find yourself at points in your life reciting some of these lines to people.
Sure.
Next time you see arugula, I know exactly what you're gonna be saying or thinking.
The vegetable.
It's a vegetable. I enjoy that. You know, I think a lot of what I enjoy about this movie is that my life is very similar to his witness protection life.
Oh, really?
In terms of just like the really sad suburban neighborhood and then the depressing grocery store. So I probably connected with that at some point growing up watching this movie. I don't know when I first saw this movie, but I find the humor in this over-the-top character being planted into my world. Which, to be clear, like there aren't horses roaming around behind my house in a big field. I guess we have coyotes, so that's not really that different.
Yes, horses and coyotes, very similar.
I mean, just wild animals, and but like growing up, yeah, like in the opening scene of this movie when they're pulling up to his little house there on the corner, like half of the houses are still being built or there's just like empty lots and stuff. Like that was totally my life growing up. Like we lived on a block that was like half built and then there were just like constant construction because it was just ever expanding into the nothingness.
Yeah, and then there was the coyote dressage happening in the backyard.
It was a golf course, but basically the same thing. He just got, you know, he had a white horse out his kitchen window, and we had a bunch of fat old white guys. So it's the same thing. Playing golf
in like one of those old timey horse costumes, where like one was the front end and one was the back end.
Yes, except the horse costume was of course a golf cart.
Oh, okay.
But you know they could have put like a horse head on the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Might be mixing some of my metaphors here.
I think they were mixed. Yeah.
Anyway, the arugula at our Safeway is pretty sad. really the best arugula you get is like the half arugula, half spinach bagged salads that you buy. That's like the freshest that you're going to find around here.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't really, I've never lived anywhere where it came in like bunches. Like arugula always came as a prepackaged salad bag or box item.
But I imagine if you wanted to find some fresher greens, you have a place that you could go.
Oh, well, I mean, even in the bag or box, they're pretty fresh because I live in California. And we either grow everything in California or we import it from slightly south of the border through Mexico.
Like avocados. Avocados are big out there in the California.
Yes, yes. And that's why no one can afford houses out here, is because we have so many avocados we're buying constantly.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you should move to the Freiburg suburb of San Diego and you could afford one of these tiny little houses in the middle of horse country.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd rather live where Rick Moranis lives at the beginning of the movie.
He literally lives in Coronado, which is not a place that mere mortals can live.
No, I found that really entertaining, especially after he has that conversation with Steve Martin and his wife about where he lives. And
oh, he has to live at the center of the city so his wife can work with the baseball player?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that conversation results in him walking to his seaside cottage of a house, and the poor guy living there. I was just like, oh, this is
I guess I only infer
hard.
That he lives in Coronado because there's the scene where he's driving over the bridge.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the, you know, the movies where the office assistant lives in a 2,800 square foot New York loft apartment. In every rom-com movie that you ever watch, it's the same sort of thing. It's just like, yeah, so he's obviously affording that on his FBI salary. Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really cool houses in Coronado. Some that have been there since like the early 1900s that were like 12 bedroom, like multi-family homes that had like guest homes in the back for like the help and things. And they're all going for $30 million.
The help?
Yeah, people who had like live-in maids and stuff.
Oh, geez.
Not literally like the movie The Help.
I know. It was just you're reminiscing to an era that I would not enjoy.
I'm reminiscing to an era of architecture that I enjoy. Is all
okay.
I'm doing. And I think
are those all just like Victorian mansions and stuff with like gingerbread stuff all over the outside?
Mm-hmm. And then like in between though, they stuck the like you know your canonical like 1,800 square foot beach home or whatever that has just like a giant patio out front that faces the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice area.
Yeah.
It's quiet, full of a lot of drunk people. A place where you can get breakfast 24 hours a day over there.
Oh, I'm beginning to suspect you might know that it's full of a lot of drunk people from personal experience.
No, I never really got that drunk down there.
Okay.
I don't think.
Okay. Your Honor, I plead the fifth. But so,
to the best of my recollection, which is slightly foggy for no discernible reason.
Foggy San Diego. No, but so this movie starts with a weird credit sequence that has a bunch of matte composited
fake clouds.
Yeah, this is pre-Photoshop, everyone, or at least Photoshop used in movies, I mean. So they're super saturated sky photography sandwiched with other ground photography and stuff, and it's all cut out and optically composited, and it looks bad.
It was also very strange. At least portions of it, the text that faded on and off had grain, but most of the cloud stuff didn't.
Yeah,
which I thought was odd.
I don't know how that all happened to work out, but anyway, that goes to the thing of Steve Martin and his wife moving in to their place, the FBI agent Rick Moranis introducing himself. We established through dialogue that Steve Martin is in the Witness Protection Program, and he's an Italian mobster, Italian-American mobster from New York, and that he's there under duress. Basically, because this is all part of his deal, then he has to testify, etc. And he has the house. They go in, and then she doesn't like it there, and she wants to kill herself, and she wants to go back to New York. So she packs up and she leaves him. And he
also, I love that Rick Moranis is like his manic thing before he turns into cool Rick Moranis is that he tries to get out of the car without taking his seatbelt off multiple times, and it's always funny to me.
Well, he still does that after he's cool Rick Moranis at the end of the movie.
Because then he goes back to being uncool Rick Moranis because he's flustered later.
Yeah.
It really telegraphs how he's feeling. Also, how it's raining when he gets his bad news. It's very subtle.
Yeah. Very subtle. So they do that exchange, and then we have and he also has the conversation with Todd about what his wife does and how he's jealous he couldn't live there. His wife works with baseball players and he really loves baseball, and like if they ever need it, want to have a ticket to go, they can just get in touch with him. And then
don't forget the title cards where it's got the clouds and it says my friend Barney also has problems. It's all written in Steve Martin's sort of odd, fake New York mobster vernacular as well.
Yeah.
As I am not trained to do anything else, I re-embark on my career.
But he goes back to his seaside cottage, like we were saying. He walks up to the door, and there's the baseball player who just lost the thing that he heard on the radio.
Very conveniently, he was driving home listening to the sports radio where he heard that... he blew a ninth inning, 8-run lead, and now he's being sent down to the minors. It's very sad.
Uh-huh. And he's genuinely saying, oh, sorry to see you go and stuff. And then his wife comes out, says she's going with him, that he's boring, and his everything in his life is a system, and blah,
blah,
blah.
He's very predictable, and he's got a system for eating pancakes, at which point Amanda turns and looks at me, and I can feel her stare on the side of my head while they're talking about how weird it is that he has a system for eating pancakes.
Yeah.
And we both say, what's wrong with having a system for eating pancakes?
Dan, I'm going to ask you a question now. I want you to be completely honest. What is your system for eating pancakes?
I don't really have a system necessarily for eating pancakes, I think. I'm not a big fan of butter on my waffles. To a certain extent, I'll put some of it on pancakes. But, you got to lift the pancakes and the waffles to make sure that they get syrup. As well, the people who just put syrup on the top pancake and hope that it'll drip down enough that it'll get onto the bottom pancakes, those people are insane, and I don't know what they're doing.
Okay, so there's not really a system. You just kind of just put
I think
syrup
it was more of a
things.
General indication that I have very peculiar and very specific ways of doing things and preferences that make me seem like you could write my life out on a piece of paper and live it that way.
Oh, okay.
I think it's mostly things like...
I never got that impression from you at all.
Every Sunday evening...
What are the key combinations on your keyboard to pour the syrup on your waffles?
Well, if I had one, it would probably be Shift Caps Lock S, just because like that's hyper key plus shift and then syrup.
Uh-huh.
But, like I do things like I have a reminder pop up every Sunday to remind me to take out the trash cans, because why would I bother trying to remember to take out the trash cans?
I don't know. So great.
Anyway,
do you get your haircut on the 11th of every month?
See, I probably should put that on my calendar, because it's been like 3 months since I've gotten a haircut and my hair is very long and very ridiculous looking.
Okay.
I don't have a reminder.
You should start that. But I'm going to give you a suggestion.
What?
Why don't you do it out on the 17th of every month? Because then you know what you can do? You can get a haircut tomorrow.
Oh, I was going to
do it today.
I
believe
in you. I was going to do it today, but I ran out of time.
Oh, well, but see, that's because you didn't have a reminder.
No, it's because I had too many things to do. I had to mow the lawn today.
Oh.
The lawn was very long, because I don't have a reminder for that as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you also needed to wear your suit to go mow the lawn, so I can understand the delay.
I would have worn a suit to mow the lawn. It was a little warm today. It was only like 78, actually, so it wasn't that bad, but probably still would have been too hot.
Probably for a suit, yes.
I also transplanted a palm tree.
How did the operation go?
Not very well. I think it left about half of its roots in the ground where I took it from.
How big was this palm tree?
The base of it is probably only about a foot high, and then the little fronds go up probably 2 more feet, so it's probably 3.5 feet maybe total.
Where did you get a 3-foot palm tree?
The seeds from our other palm tree blew in the wind and then fell underneath this other bush that happens to get watered and shaded, and it just sprouted kind of like next to the root of these larger bushes, and I didn't notice it until it had gotten larger. And then I go, oh, I should probably get that out of there before it gets any bigger, because it's not really going to be able to grow because it's underneath another bush.
Oh. So you had to, you know, take the palm tree out of the bush. Might I suggest a name for your palm tree?
You can, but as I advised Amanda, don't get attached to it because it's probably not going to survive.
Okay, well then I'm going to name it Sean Spicer because he's also probably not going to be press secretary by the time this episode airs.
Oh, that's good. That's cool. We'll call him Little Spicy. That's
yes,
good.
Little Spicy the Palm.
Little Spicy buried halfway in the dirt by the back wall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's better than being amongst the bushes, but so...
He was amongst the bushes. He was
yes, he was not in the bushes. In the bushes. Okay. No, but so... we have, of course, I'm referring to the lawn maintenance scene that happens much later in this film where he's wearing a suit, and there are many suits in this film. Suits are part of his life for Vincent Antonelli, Steve Martin's character. And I know that you have a certain attraction to suits as well. I speak, of course, of the infamous metallic iridescent teal suit that you bought.
Custom ordered, hand tailored for me, in Vietnam.
Yes.
It's a nice suit. I don't think it fits me anymore. Cause, that was, let's see, 7-ish years ago.
Okay. You should give it the old college try or go take it to a seamster or something.
Yeah. I would like to, have it adjusted because the pant legs were a little baggier, I guess. I think they're still sort of in like a mid-90s style when they made the suit for me, and I didn't really have an opportunity to go in for a fitting because I was in a hospital. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it is kind of a zoot suit.
I mean, the jacket is very slim and nice, but so the pants are a little baggy.
So a little bit more of like a hammer pant.
It's not quite a hammer. Well, I mean, based on the shininess, I guess one could classify it as a hammer pant.
Okay, just checking. Now,
does not have a low crotch down by the knees, if that's what you mean.
Okay, that's good. Now, everything else in your life, though, is not revolving around suits so much. However, you have a deep admiration for Steve Martin's character's suits. So I'm curious
particularly the white one, because I find that white one with the shiny pattern just to be too fun to like not want to have one.
Okay, so why don't you have one, since this is your favorite movie?
What? Why don't I have a white suit that I wear around?
Yes, exactly. You can wear it around your office. I guarantee no one will make fun of you.
It's a great idea. No, I might as well just get like sweatpants that look like that and like a t-shirt that looks like a suit.
Oh, like one of those fake tux things? You just get
When I was young, I had a fake tuxedo t-shirt.
Oh, course
it was
did.
It was a skateboard company's version of the fake tuxedo t-shirt, though.
Was it Volcom or Hurley?
Neither. It was Anti-Hero, I believe, was the name of the skateboard company.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that brand.
Yeah, they make the skateboards, not necessarily the clothing.
See, I was thinking skateboard clothing.
No, Volcom. That was a little bit later. Not really my jam because they're weird. And what was the other one you? What was the other one you said?
Hurley.
Hurley? That's more of a surf thing, I think.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever owned any Hurley.
I mean, it was all in like PacSun or whatever, so I just kind of...
Hurley is the one, their logo was the close parenthesis, open parenthesis, wasn't it?
Yeah, with a bar in between. Yeah, because it was an H.
I don't think I ever had any of that. It's dumb.
Okay.
I had a lot of, I was a big fan of Enjoy, E-N-J-O-I. Their logo was a panda.
Oh, how fanciful.
I liked their skateboards. I have a couple of, I have two of them still in the corner. They don't have wheels or anything on them because I can't ride a skateboard anymore.
Oh.
But I had some of their shirts as well.
Can't or won't.
It's a good looking panda. Can't or won't ride the skateboard?
Yes.
I mean, I can stand on them. It's not a good idea for me to try to do the things on a skateboard that I used to be able to do on a skateboard because I will break an ankle.
Oh, I just meant like go forwards on it or something.
Oh yeah, I can do that.
But then eventually
I completely lost my balance.
Then the temptation to like Tony Hawk it starts getting up there once you get up to speed, and then you fall and you bust your ass.
I mean, generally speaking, you fall and bust your face if you're going to do that. But I do my Tony Hawking indoors on the carpet with no wheels, so I don't jump very high. And as a consequence, I can't fall very far if I do.
So you have a board that has
yes,
no wheels
on it
in your house.
I can just stand on it in my office here. I can just stand on it. I can pop it a few inches up in the air and then land back on it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do a little like depressing half a kickflip with it.
Oh,
that's the one where it spins longitudinally.
What's the ollie? What's an ollie?
That's just a hop up in the air.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a disappointing answer. I thought
yes,
it was going to be more to
over,
it.
Thanks. That's the base. That's like your base flavor for most tricks.
Oh,
you go up in the air. And then it does stuff usually, and then that makes it fancier. But just the up in the air and then the back down part, that's an ollie.
Okay, so it's kind of like espresso, where everything is just, all the coffee drinks are based on an ollie.
Right.
So you have different things. You have your I don't know, mock ollie auto, where you do a certain move with two ollies or something.
That's good. I would probably call the kickflip probably your latte mm-hmm. of the moves, because
okay.
it's sort of like your de facto... like first move that you kind of want to learn.
Okay. Is it your entry level?
It does take a while to master a good kickflip, but yeah, that's kind of where you start. And then you start spinning it both longitudinally and latitudinally at the same time. I don't know if latitudinally is the right word for that.
I wouldn't bother correcting you.
we'll go rotating Y axis and Z axis at the same time. That makes sense.
Y axis being up, of course.
Yes. Well, yes. Forward, I guess.
Forward.
I guess if up is the y-axis, we're talking about x and z.
Yeah.
You don't really... I guess you could rotate in the y-axis. That would kind of be a hard flip.
Well, no. I mean, y-axis pointing up.
Right, yeah.
Like,
no, I'm
if you rotate around the y-axis, you would be spinning horizontally. Because you're rotating around the axis.
That's a good point.
You're not
you're
in
right.
the direction of the axis.
So we're rotating in the y-axis. This is a horrible digression. Y-axis as well as, I don't know, probably x, right? That's what we're doing with
sure.
forward.
Well, you can pick whatever you want. It's your mental model. I just want to make sure that I understand what your mental model is.
Sure. Yeah, we're good. My mental model is foggy.
Okay.
Basically, at this point, as we have established, my mental model involves translating in the y-axis very, very small amounts and then putting it back where it came from.
Oh, okay. Well, what about Little League?
I played a lot of Little League.
Okay. I did not. So would
not,
you
not
be...
at all? You didn't play any baseball?
No.
You had them long arms. You would be great for pitching or something.
See, I had a relative, my Aunt Irene, who kept insisting that I should play basketball because I was so tall. And I had to keep telling her I was not very good at anything that had to do with sports. So,
is it the hand-eye coordination thing?
Yeah, also the anxiety and fear of failure and not wanting to even try because I didn't want to embarrass myself.
Oh, we had all that too, and I failed a lot of times. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's really what made me the very confident human being that I am today.
I mean, there are no scars like childhood scars that have to do with sports because all the other ones just heal right up. But
mm-hmm. that's why you play a sport for a year and you realize you're terrible at it, and then you just try another sport, and that usually gets you all the way through at least up to high school, and then nobody really expects you to play high school sports because you got to focus on your academics so you can get into a good school. So then you can just give up.
Oh, okay, good. See, maybe I should have played along a little. No, but I was good at tennis and volleyball, and when we were forced to play them in PE. The other things I was awful at.
Interesting.
Yes.
I was okay at tennis.
I mean, tennis is fine because it just there's a certain rhythm to it. So you feel less bad about things, and there are fewer people playing, so it's not like you're not like doing the whole team thing.
There's more running back and forth, though, especially if you're bad at tennis than I would have preferred.
Oh, but the running part doesn't bother me. It's just mainly the team aspect. I don't like other people. So with tennis, you have the fewest number of other people that you could be playing with.
Well, but, you know, the most of the time when you're practicing basketball, you're by yourself. So
No. There was no practicing basketball, Dan. There were basketball courts, and mm-hmm. you were in teams, and you would play basketball. This is the only method.
You can go just like play basketball by yourself. I do it now because I'm an adult and I don't have like friends to go play basketball with, because that would be weird.
Oh, well, not all of us were fancy rich people who lived in the suburbs with giant basketball nets to play with.
It's a public park down on the corner.
Not all of us are people who wanted to go to a public park, Dan.
Actually, when I was young, we did have a basketball hoop in the backyard.
Mm. Oh, you poor thing. Let's get back to this movie. You get the good grocery store scene here. The second the grocery store scene started, I was like, this is exactly how Dan must shop at Safeway.
Steal the price gun and reprice everything and then buy it all.
Yes, take all the steaks and spend $12 and what was it, 63 cents or something on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like these days, first of all, most of the labels are like large labels that say like the weight on it and how much it costs. So you couldn't really do that for most things.
Yeah. Well, that's also because there's barcodes.
Yeah. Silly barcodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you just happen to have a cashier who just like would rather hang himself than look something up. So.
Huh. Whatever people that could be a reference to.
People are very dedicated to their jobs around here.
Okay.
This fella just, I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but like when we arrive into the Safeway, like there's a Starbucks thing in there because it's a Safeway and they all have Starbucks, but it's completely surrounded by construction plastic. So you can sort of see through, but not really, but it's, you know, it's like 30 feet tall to the ceiling, and they took out an entire cash register and the plastic surrounds that. So it looks like they're going to like double the size of the Starbucks area or whatever. So we get up to the stand there to pay or whatever. And like, oh, what's going on over here? They expanding it or something? What's going on? And he like looks over his shoulder so quickly that you like, he never even like looked at it really. He goes, oh yeah, I don't know, something renovating it as well, I think. I don't know, maybe making it bigger. Not really sure. It's like, cool. No idea. Don't really care at all. Whatever. That's fine. It's fine. This is also the guy who has, on other occasions, just like forgotten to give us a bag of our groceries, and then we don't realize until we get home. It's like, we're really going to go back and complain about like $9 worth of stuff that he forgot to give us? Not really.
Okay.
He's a horrible employee, basically.
Okay.
He doesn't like to make conversation or look at anybody, or just a lot of heavy sighing. He's like in his mid-40s and he's just the worst human being.
Oh.
service without a smile.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you left a part of that story out.
No, well, it was the next part of the story.
Yes.
So, you buy cases of water at the grocery store?
Occasionally.
Do you ever do the thing where you have multiple cases of water and then you leave them in the cart because they're big and heavy, and then maybe you put one up on the conveyor belt and you go like, I got two of these or three of these, and then they type in the number two and then they scan one?
Yes. That is what I worked at a grocery store.
That's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yes.
So, after I got over being grumpy about the fact that they moved my seltzer water to the wine aisle, and the fact that the 12 packs are a dollar cheaper than the 24 pack, I cleared out the 12 packs. I bought five of them because, you know, it's been a while since I had seltzer, and I wanted to have some damn seltzer. I drank a lot of it.
How much seltzer do you drink?
I don't know. I drink like three or four a day, okay. So it goes quick.
Wow.
So I got five 12 packs, and I left four of them in the cart, and I put one on the conveyor belt, and it was the last thing to go through. And Mister gives zero craps about his job or whatever. Also, I was like, they had Safeway does this horrible thing. Like, if you get their app, they have a coupon that you can scan with the app. So I'm like trying to futz around with this and sign up for the app so I can save a couple extra cents, like another 80 cents per pack. So they're like $1.70 or something for a 12 pack. and I couldn't figure it out. And he was in no mood to like try and help me because he's like never heard of a cell phone before or something. I don't know what his deal was. But anyway, it goes through and the other in the cart, like literally 2 feet from me. And my 12 pack of Seltzer goes by and I go, I got 5 of these. And he spends a few minutes looking at the thing and he scans it. And I go, oh, did the price come through? Because you link the coupon with the app and then it's just supposed to show up on the register. I'm like, oh, well, it looks like it didn't go through. It's still $2.50 a thing. And you know, when they scan it, there's discount coupons. So like they scan an item and then like 30 things scroll by on the screen because there's this coupon and that coupon and whatever. So I can't tell what the hell's actually happening. But suffice to say, put it back in the cart, get out of the car, drive home, and I look at the receipt, and he didn't type in the number 5. He just scanned one of them. So they spent $2.50 for 5 12 packs of Seltzer.
Dan the thief.
He gifted it to me. It was his way of saying, I apologize for being a curmudgeon and for forgetting your grocery bag the last time you were in here. Please take these four pieces of Seltzer, which, by the way, I feel like they're probably going to notice it because there are no more 12 packs of Seltzer on the shelf, and they sold one of them, according to their computer.
No, let me tell you something, Dan. There is no...
I don't know how inventory works in a grocery store.
There is genuinely no inventory tracking that's going on. There is some partial inventory tracking, but it's mostly like, yeah, let's reorder more stuff. There is not the down to the per item level of things. That's usually why if you go to a retailer that's like, we have one left in stock, and then you get there and you're like, okay, it says you have one left in stock. And they're like, what? Huh? No, we haven't had those for weeks. And it's because somebody just didn't clear out of their inventory system correctly.
Very frustrating. That has happened to me.
Yeah, so... You can't really rely on those systems, which is why they make every cashier and every manager sit there and watch all these videos about shrinkage.
Like going to the pool when it's cold outside?
No. No. Shrinkage is when items are going away, and they should not be. And that is slowly making the company lose money. They call it shrinkage because it's just tiny, tiny little things. But it eventually adds up to the company. It means big things for the company. So anyway, grocery stores. But
I suppose it's not surprising though, because at one point I inadvertently purchased a 12 pack of club soda because it looks identical to the Seltzer. It's just like a slightly different blue color. And I went back in there and I said like, hey, can I just go swap this out? And the guy at the customer service desk said, sure. Are they the same price? And I said, pretty sure. And he said, yeah, just take it then. And he walked away. Like it wasn't like a, can I see your receipt or like come back up here to do the exchange? He's like, just go put it back on the shelf and then get the other one and take it. And I was like, all right, this feels a little weird. I'm just going to go put a thing down and take another thing that nobody has any record of me taking and just walk back out with.
Yep.
Yeah. You know.
The magic.
He was like 15 stores. Though. And he was, I don't know why he was like the customer service manager at the time. So that was like, I think he had enough that day as well.
Well, when I was 15, I worked in a grocery store and I would be buying the customer service desk sometimes.
Did you just tell people like, yeah, go swap it for whatever you want? Like, what if I got back there and there was a price difference? What, like,
Dan?
Yeah.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret.
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit finicky about things. And so, yes, I would actually make you bring it up and I would do the refund rescan thing. And all of that jazz.
So you're a good employee then. That's what I would expect.
Or I would price check it in the very least. Because sometimes it'd be like, we bought 20 of these yogurts and they're all discounted at 1 cent each with the preferred card customer program. And then it'd be like, I don't want to refund all of those and then rescan that and then rescan that. So I will just do a price comparison. Yes, it's identical. Okay, fine. So yes. In that case, I failed the inventory control system. But it was really onerous.
This system where you got your regular price, you got your club card price, and then if you got your app and you can scan this other UPC code or some crap with your iPhone, then you get another price that you don't get a coupon for. It's just supposed to go onto your card when you type it into the credit card thing.
Yeah, I have no patience for that. Jason is it surprised me. To a degree, because he in many ways he doesn't really care about apps or things, but the second where he was going to save like I don't know 5 cents. He was like, let me install this app and scroll through all these coupons. And so he was really into the Target one and the CVS one. I'm not installing either. I don't care if it's costing me a little extra money. The prospect of being tracked by these systems is not appealing to me. I'll let you in a little secret. I have cards, customer cards that are not registered. So I can use them for discounts.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing, too. Yeah. We use Amanda's parents' phone number for our card because we don't have a card or we never linked it to a phone number. We're never going to carry the card. So I download the app and I punch our number in to try and associate with this coupon with our phone number. And it shows us, like, the purchase. And it's clearly her parents, her brother, like, some other random family member, and us all mixed in there. And it's like, ooh, you're trying to target our purchases and you are not even close because... At any given day, it's like, oh, you bought 2 gallons of sweet tea. It's like, no, I didn't. I buy water is what I buy.
Yes. Now they're getting all your seltzer water coupons.
Oh, it's great. It's totally. But we're all, you know, we're pooling our resources on those, with like the 10 cent discounts that you get on your gas at whatever chain that is. I don't know. I don't use any of that because I feel bad.
Okay.
I feel like I'm not the one earning the points, so I shouldn't be redeeming it, even though a portion of the points are mine.
Okay. That was an interesting discussion.
Mm-hmm. All this is to say is if there was a price gun, I probably would have tried at some point in my life, although I don't think I would figure out how to use the price gun.
Oh, well, I don't know myself. And it was after my time.
You didn't work before my time. In 1990 in a small town?
I did not. But anyway... on his way out, he asks for arugula. It's a vegetable. Look it up.
The owner of the grocery store asks his new customer if they're satisfying all of his grocery store needs.
That does not happen.
Maybe in Freiburg, San Diego, it does.
Yeah. Well,
Freiburg an actual place? I feel like it's not.
I didn't look it up. It could be. Maybe. Don't care. So anyway, they leave. He leaves there. And he basically just keeps committing fraud stuff. And there's a thing with the turtle, she accidentally kills, and then she runs into him again and has to get a new turtle. And then that introduces them to, the old guy he's the character actor who I feel like I've seen many, many times. He's very funny. I like him. And he's in the pet store, it's an old associate. And then he finds out there are all these other mobsters on the witness protection program, and they all go to some terrible little, I don't know, Ponderosa or whatever that's supposed to be, Sizzler, and they pop ovas. The salads and stuff, and they're all complaining about the Italian food and the marinara. He starts to realize that he's going to be expected to have a real job, so then he starts to set up his own new racket, new crime syndicate out there with all the retired gangsters.
As discreet as this small town is and maybe useful for hiding mobsters, at some point when you put too many mobsters in the same place, they will get together and form a mob syndicate. I think that's like Newton's fourth law or something. You put too many mobsters in one city, they're going to turn into their own mob. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the FBI really should have diversified their mob locations in the witness relocation program.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like a match game. Like, if you're from New York, you go to Freiburg, and if you're from San Francisco, you go to, I don't know, like Portland, Maine or some crap. I don't know where you would send somebody on the other side of the country from San Francisco. But he meets all his old pals who all have stupid fun new names, like William Hickey is the actor you're referring to. His new name is Billy Sparrow, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And he runs Sparrow's pet whatever thing.
Mm-hmm. Pet Emporium.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a parrot that says you're under arrest.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they start. He has the brainwave to say, you know, there's enough is here to start a crime wave. So they start. Basically, it seems like the majority of their business involves hijacking trucks and then selling what is inside the trucks,
yep.
Including books and car radios and swordfish.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah,
big export from San Diego, swordfish.
Not to my knowledge, but it's probably something easy to get from the prop department. So they have this all going on, and Hannah Hart, or Hannah, what was her last name?
Stubbs.
Stubbs, Hannah Stubbs. She is the uptight district attorney for the Freiburg area. And she's got her best friend Crystal, who works at the police department. They're busting people left and right. They bust Steve Martin at one point. He's all like, oh, you know, it's for Thanksgiving. It's very big in Sicily. All of this lying.
A lot of comical Nora Ephron dialogue between this silly character and this uptight assistant district attorney.
Yeah. Through this process, Rick Moranis, and he comes in and he's like, oh, you can't arrest him because he's in the witness protection program. She's very upset about this because she wants to throw the book at him because, you know, it's all about her community and enforcing the laws, and she's very strict about things. And we're supposed to get that across, get that from this scene. And Rick Moranis, who's very strict about things in a sense and having a system, is clashing with her because their systems do not align here. Because he has the FBI's interests in mind and not hers.
Yeah, there's also the not so subtle telegraphing of the love connection to be made, because Crystal, the police officer, was saying that Steve Martin made the hair on the back of her neck stand up, and she says she's never felt like that about somebody. But then when Rick Moranis comes in the room with his all like, "Did you have a warrant or whatever?" and like, "Let's go," he's under my supervision, all FBI'd up, she sort of like grabs the back of her neck in a very weird way, mm-hmm. that is meant to indicate that she's surprised that she has felt something at the appearance of Rick Moranis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She likes short men with really horrible CVS eyeglasses.
There is no subtlety in this movie.
Well, I mean, compared to Steve Martin's character in this movie, everything is subtle.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, it's predictable. Like this is not a secret who's going to wind up with who at the end of the film.
Well, I mean, aside from Steve Martin, because he goes through ostensibly three wives.
But
it's interesting to me that this is a PG-13 movie that is a kind of meant to be enjoyed by a large range of people, but then there is that F word in the grocery store, and there's clearly an 80-yard removed F word later. So maybe there was like a limit, like you could get one in, but not two, and they chose the grocery store one because it was funnier than the one later.
Well, except that it makes the one later when he refers to him as a fart instead of that.
He said, "Kill the fart." My apologies, yeah, Your Honor, but that's what he said. It's like, why would you apologize for
fart?
Saying,
yeah,
for fart. Yeah, no, yeah, doesn't make any sense.
No, so that's obvious that does not work as effectively, but so anyway,
the grocery store is hilarious.
Yeah. So they have conflicts, but Steve Martin realizes that Hannah and the FBI guy would be good together. So he does the whole baseball thing after finding out, you know, all the stuff about the kids and whatever, and takes him off to the baseball thing and arranges to have Rick Moranis sit in the seat next to Joan Cusack, and then. They're watching the Padres play, and
well, theoretically, they're watching the Padres play. Mm-hmm. You never see the field at any instance in the game. You just see them hanging out. It's a very economical way to shoot a baseball game.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of economy in this movie.
He also teaches her kids the lesson about like why you don't wave your wallet around, because mm-hmm. some sneaky mobster type could bump into you and steal your wallet.
Yeah. And he does it to the kids, which is an important life lesson, I guess.
Lessons from the school Hard Knocks, that these kids are not going to attend because they live in Freiburg instead of New York.
Yeah, the bumper. So they have that, they talk about the, what was it, law enforcement ball or whatever, or what have you. I don't care for the law enforcement ball very much for the reasons that I described earlier.
He dances with Joan Cusack to the merengue out on the beach. It's a wonderful scene.
But this is, of course, after their trip to New York, where he learned the merengue. He runs into Steve Martin's Italian family, who are Italian, as opposed to Steve Martin, who's not. And
it's a very nice, he uses the emotional subterfuge to of the large family to evade Rick Moranis immediately after getting off the plane, so he can go do whatever he's going to do and not be handcuffed to Rick Moranis. Which basically he just, you know, he has a night on the town, and then he goes to his tailor because presumably he needs some more shiny suits, and then somehow Rick Moranis catches up with him there, and then they get Rick Moranis a nice fancy suit because he dresses so poorly he attracts attention to Steve Martin, so they can't have that.
Yeah, and so
They show his horrible socks.
And they go to their hotel, and he sits on the bed in the suit pants, but has taken the suit jacket off, and talks about how they're going to sit in and have dinner there and order room service. And he calls up room service and says, you have anything Italian? Dressing? Yeah, that's good. Okay, and do you have pasta? What kind of pasta do you have? Ah, macaroni and cheese. And so that's bad. I feel like a hotel in New York, maybe scrounge up something.
It's a very bad hotel.
Yeah, it did not seem impressive in the least. So Steve Martin makes up his mind that he does not want to be stuck there and under these circumstances. So he comes up with the whole thing about tricking Rick Moranis into taking off the pants that he's wearing, because he's like, oh, you're going to ruin it. You're going to have to dry clean it, and it's gonna ruin stuff. Like, you got to really take this off. And hang it up. Oh, sorry, so wrinkled. I'm going to go press it for you. There's a press down the hall. Do you think they'll have change? Oh, no, I'm sure it'll be fine. And then he goes and he leaves. And then Rick Moranis, a couple seconds later, picks up the phone to order the room service and then realizes that he has had his clothes stolen. So
he's been duped.
Yeah, he opens the door, gets a wet mop.
I love the fact that he just tilted the mop against the door, so when he opens it, it like falls in on him. He just catches it and throws it down. That's hilarious to me.
Yeah, but unfortunately, Rick Moranis just runs out in a trench coat and chases him down to presumably the Italian restaurant that Steve Martin had mentioned that he wanted to go to earlier. To have the linguine. I didn't see any establishing thing about that being the restaurant, but I'm just assuming that's how he found him in all of New York City.
It just seemed like a dance club, nightclub kind of bar.
Yeah. But otherwise,
although if that kind of place had good linguine, I would go there.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose, but it didn't really seem like they were serving much food. Perhaps this is after they've already eaten. So he arrives in his trench coat, and he does the whole thing, and then he's got the suit in the coat check, and he gets that back, and he puts it on. And then Steve Martin says, oh, you know, we could stay here and be safe and have, you know, dinner and drinks and stuff, or we could go back to the hotel, and it'll be boring. Rick Moranis decides to stay there, and so then Steve Martin goes and
tells him not to make a scene in front of his other mobster friends, because you don't want them to know that you're the FBI, because they'll shoot you.
Yes. And so they go and they do the stuff, hanging out with the women that they come across, and then they do the dance montage with the merengue.
It's a dance montage. Barney learns how to dance. They're mirroring the moves that Steve Martin's doing. It's a fun scene.
Yeah, and then afterwards, towards the end of the dance, he notices that two gentlemen have come down the staircase by the chandelier and are being very suspicious. And this is when Rick Moranis pulls out his gun and shoots up at them and hits the chandelier instead. It comes crashing down, and the enemy mobsters scatter. Steve Martin is very impressed by this and says he's indebted to him and whatever. They go and they do the testimony. He gives a recounting of the things, and the lawyer says, oh, well, you're just doing this because of you, all this free stuff. And he says, well, you know, they're paying me and they put me up someplace, but it's not New York. I grew up in New York and I want to be there, and blah, 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 blah. Heartfelt testimony. So they all think that went well. They get back on their American Airlines flight. Rick Moranis is much more relaxed, at this point and drunk, than he was on their flight to New York.
He's cool Barney now, 'cause he's got a suit. He's telling jokes to the stewardess lady. He tells the nun to have a drink, 'cause, monks make it.
Yeah, and he starts writing his memoir things. They fly back to San Diego. Rick Moranis gets put on this undercover mission, which is all that Kirby wanted, all Kirby ever wanted. So they go to do that, and it's like, oh, who will watch him and keep him out of trouble? It's like, oh, he'll be fine. Of course he's not. Immediately after he leaves, Steve Martin and friends rob a truck that's full of empty water bottles. They figure that they can use the empty water bottles for a fake charity, and they start collecting the trillions of dollars of fake change that moves through Freiburg. I don't understand how that's possible, but
it must be that. I mean, things were different back when it was a cash economy, I guess. Now everyone's got credit cards and the scam wouldn't fly. But back in 1990, when everyone did their business with cash, people would have a lot of leftover change, I guess.
I would assume so. I mean, he was filling these things up weekly and hauling them off, and had a sizable portion of funds, which is what he uses to build the stadium at the end of the film, which takes 1 year to construct. So it was a lot of change.
It takes a long time for a man like him to change, Joe.
Oh. I'm so happy you coined that. Now,
ooh, they, good comeback.
Yeah, they have him and his Chevy Caprice, which is a hideous car. He's going around hauling things, and he runs into the kids, and the kids see him hauling stuff, and he doesn't feel bad about this at all. I thought they were gonna have a scene here where he would see them put the money in the thing and have a change of heart, but he does not, and he doesn't notice that. But the kids are like, oh, no, I can't have ice cream because I need to give to the Little League field. It's like, oh, that's it's not nice, although I don't really care about the kids at all. Steve Martin does get busted, and he promises to make a deal with Hannah that he'll give them the thing that he'll give them the two fences, he says, that are going to be doing a lot of shipping stuff and whatever. And it turns out that these are the contacts who have been undercover waiting in this hotel, who are supposed to be playing Canadian. Rick Moranis is, of course, Canadian, and he was on, SCTV. They even make him wear the stereotypical garb of I guess more of an Alberta thing than a Vancouver thing. But anyway, so he's all dressed up, and they're waiting. They get busted. He's very disappointed in everybody. Hannah's upset. Throw the book at him. She's like, I'm going to, you know, prosecute you under your real name. And it's like, oh, you can't do that, because then they're going to come for him. And she's like, no, they won't. Nobody cares. Then, of course, they come for him. And I like the part where she says to the judge that, you know, there's nobody who's coming. There's the door's not going to open, and there's not going to be like two guys in white on white ties with guns. And of course, there are two guys with white ties. Standing up there on the balcony. Crystal spots them, gets them out of the way. They have a chase from there to the mini league, kids league, little league baseball field that's been put under construction very recently during his time in his jail cell. They have one last little shootout thing there, and Steve Martin shoots with his gun. Up until now, he said he can't shoot anybody. Nails the guns in each of the mobsters' hands. They go flying without killing the mobsters, and they're busted, and everybody's happy. And then Rick Moranis says, oh, yeah, this was always the plan, to confirm the alibi that Steve Martin's character had, so that it will fix things with him and Hannah, and it will also fix things for Steve Martin, and this resolves stuff. Of course, I glossed over the part with Carol Kane being in the film, but
yeah, and then, you know, the being in the jail, and basically up until this point, Steve Martin didn't really know that Rick Moranis and Joan Cusack were a thing, and he said he's in love with Joan Cusack, and Steve Martin screwed it all up with his stupid mobster dealings. So that's when he goes off and makes his phone call to start doing the construction so they can have their alibi. It's very very gray area in terms of legality versus scratching your friend's back and looking out for your pals kind of thing. But it's all in good fun for the movie because Rick Moranis and Joan Cusack get to be in love. And Steve Martin gets to give back to the community in the form of a very nice, very large baseball field for the kids. And, you know, the Freiburg Turtles, they got their fancy new uniforms that look like his ketchup and mustard suit. He's got the white suit on again, but, you know, red shirt, yellow tie. Not my favorite suit outfit from the movie, but it's certainly memorable because all of the weird baseball outfits that they have that mirror it, which mm-hmm. would be very uncomfortable to play baseball in, but whatever.
Yeah, and his family is there supporting him.
Yeah, they're selling popcorn and car radios and cannolis. Honestly, I would eat a cannoli at a baseball game. I'm not going to lie.
And probably not at a baseball game, but I would eat a cannoli. I like cannolis.
I do like cannolis as well, but there are people in my life who think they're too dry.
You know what? People in your life and people in my life, they agree on many things.
They're both wrong about things.
They're both wrong about cannolis. Leave the criticism, take the cannoli. They have the mom bribe the umpire that the Turtles should win. You know, that was a nice touch. And of course she speaks perfect English, like unlike the scene where she's from the old country at the airport.
Barney Coopersmith, he's the inventor of the rotary engine. And then you got the very fake New York accent. I thought Wankel invented the rotary engine.
Yeah.
I think that was a pretty good line, mm-hmm. personally, because I don't know, that amuses me.
Yeah.
But yeah, he throws out the opening pitch for the game. Everyone's doing their thing. They're selling his book because all along he's been writing down his philosophy with Barney's pen on a little notepad about his, he believes in over tipping, not just tipping, and you know, all of his other various philosophies. So he writes a book called How I Got Here, and it's got a picture of him on the cover in this really weird sort of goofy pose.
Yep. The end.
The end. Yeah, everyone lives happily ever after.
Yep.
Cue the merengue as the game starts.
Mm-hmm. It worked out well.
I downloaded the that version of the song, by the way. It should go in this episode somewhere. Maybe just like in a constant loop running behind us talking the whole time.
I think that would be a little distracting.
No, I think it'd be pretty great.
No. Overruled.
Fine, I'll edit this one.
You're out of order.
I guess there's also that what is the song that plays in the opening credits that comes back during some of the title cards?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Well, that sounded like the Warner Brothers song, but yeah, that's part not, of it. That's no. kind of how it goes.
No. Yeah.
Surfing USA is in here.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun.
So anyway,
it's a good movie. I enjoy this movie. It's fun.
It's okay.
I saw the end half of it like 3 days ago. Just rewatched it again now. Still enjoy it. I could watch it again. It's funny.
I will never rewatch this for any reason.
You should, because it's good and it's entertaining, and there's funny suits and silly dancing and Steve Martin pronouncing words weirdly.
It does make me want to watch the first half of LA Story again, though.
Does that mean next week we're going to discuss half of a movie?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like if it's an LA Story episode that we do ever, it would need to be the full movie because I need to get out my feelings about how bad the second half of that movie is. Ugh. It just falls off a cliff. Just like...
I tried to read a little bit of the description of it while you were talking. It said something about a talking billboard.
That plays into it. There is a larger than life surrealism thing happening at the beginning of the movie. Things of various varieties occur. But then at the...
things occur?
Yeah, well, I mean, like... There's an earthquake for laughs, and there's, you know, all their kind of stuff, weather jokes. But it's very broad, and in a way that makes you know that it's not reality. But the stuff that happens in the latter half of the film is played very straight, and it is a straight romance. People pining for other people, and it's just, it's sad. It makes me sad because it's not very good at it. So,
well, you know, it's you can buy it on iTunes for $10.
That's the only way to watch it? Forget it.
According to TV, the app, which, as we know,
is never wrong.
It's never very good at telling us where else we can watch things.
Yeah. I do own a copy of it, though, on iTunes.
Ugh. Why? Just because you really like that first half?
I don't know. I think so. Hard to remember. About a long time ago. It was on sale, maybe.
Not that long ago, obviously, because it's iTunes.
I mean, iTunes is, what, 15, 16 years old? And they've been selling movies since 2006 or 2007?
What is with this website? I'm just trying to friggin' find out if it's on Prime.
Sorry, Dan. We can do this later.
No, I'm just looking. I don't think it's on Prime.
Okay, that's fine. We don't have to talk about this. But anyway, that concludes the show.
Have you ever stolen anything from a grocery store accidentally?
Not to my knowledge, no. One time I thought I had stolen something several months ago. I bought ice from a BevMo. I think it was last year, maybe. I bought ice from a BevMo, and I thought that it wasn't, that it didn't get rung up, because it was one of those situations where you tell the cashier and then you go grab the bag from the cooler on your way out, because you wouldn't go grab the bag of ice, take it to the thing anyway. So,
mm-hmm. That's how most ice purchases work, I believe.
Yeah, and so I did that arrangement, and then I was like, oh no, I don't see it on here. And then they had like listed under some weird name, but I didn't realize that until after I had called the store to try to arrange payment. For the ice.
What was it, like $1.39?
I think it was like $2.19-ish or so. Ice is expensive in Los Angeles.
And having worked at a grocery store and being aware of the stocking issues and margins and things, you couldn't live with yourself if you hadn't been charged for the $2.19.
I have a conscience, Dan.
I have a conscience as well.
Remains to be seen.
It's not as black and white as if they accidentally didn't charge you for your bag of ice, you're a criminal and you should go to jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah. All right. I'll wait for you to make your little league field from the money that you saved from that refresh purchase. So you can call it the Dan Sturm
refresh field.
Refresh field.
We could use more public baseball fields around here now that all of the schools have giant fences around them, presumably to just because everyone's terrified of everything.
Yeah, well, you don't want the terrorists to assault the school grounds.
Yeah, you remember a time when during the summer and or after school that you could just like go run around a track at a school or go play basketball or baseball at a school because there was no people there and it was just like a public field. Now it's got like a 15-foot fence around it, so that's good use of money.
Ours had a fence always, though, but it was in a more city environment.
But was it a fence with like a door, like one of those fences that just blocks balls from flying out where you could just sort of like go through a little section of it?
No, it was a fence.
It was locked, like you can't get in.
Yes.
Oh, that's not good.
They had issues with vandalism and stuff.
Because
sometimes the people from Jefferson High School or Robinson High School would come over and vandalize the school.
Would they steal your mascot and then hold it for ransom before the big game?
No, it wasn't Saved by the Bell. What they would do, though, is they took their either motorcycles or dirt bikes and they turned them in circles on the front lawn of the school and ripped up all of the sod. And just left big mud streaks everywhere.
The school had a front lawn?
Small. It was not particularly large. It was an older building from the 1920s, so it was a layout that would have a lawn. Also, it's Florida, so you can water grass in Florida. They have rain that falls from the sky. Presumably the gravel that just lined everything going up to the buildings.
Yeah, here, if you don't go around the back to see the fields, which you can't now because of the fences, if you just look at the front of the schools here, most of them, you would be hard-pressed to tell the difference between a juvenile prison and our schools, because they're all made out of cinder block, painted some form of gray, usually.
Hmm. Wonder if that says something.
Some sort of subconscious effect on all of our kids growing up to feel like they're criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or, you know, you gotta believe in children.
This is what happens when you grow up mm-hmm. in schools that look like prisons. You turn into the kind of person that has a buy one get four free refresh situation.
Yes.
Well, that Safeway is like a quarter of a mile up the road from the middle school there.
Yeah, I mean, it's Arizona. The worst thing you can do is steal water. So dry.
Yeah, I mean,
this is a joke about how dry it was. But so anyway,
My Blue Heaven.
Yes,
it's a good movie.
Mm.
I'm out of seltzer.
Oh.